Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. As always, we're grateful that you choose to listen to us, and in case you ever miss the live show, you can always find us on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. Today, we're going to be talking with Liz Moeller. Liz is a career coach, a speaker, and a trainer, and also the author of If the Job Fits, Get It, Securing a Great Job Fast. Liz has helped thousands of clients realize their potential, visualize their goals, and actualize their dreams. With humor and open dialogue, she challenges individuals and groups to identify their motivators, their personal styles, and the importance of communicating assertively to achieve goals. Liz is a frequent lecturer at Pepperdine in the Grazadio School of Business and Management. She works at the Palisades Charter High School, raising career awareness through presentations and workshops for teens. She also serves on the board of the Westchester Mental Health Guild and supports the Airport Marina Counseling Center. She facilitates retreats and different teaching seminars for corporations on the importance of soft skills and emotional intelligence for career success. Liz was an advisor to the Speakers Academy of the National Speakers Association's Greater Los Angeles Chapter, where she is a past vice president and enjoyed coaching entrepreneurs to grow their businesses. Originally from Madison, Wisconsin, she is a graduate of UW-Madison and received her master's degree in vocational evaluation and psychology from the University of Arizona. Her private coaching practice is in Los Angeles near Silicon Beach, and you can find more information at LizMoeller, MOHLER.com. So Liz, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's so much fun. You know, I think you and I got referred and connected a couple months ago, and just because of timing and guests, I'm so excited that we get to have you on the show today. And getting to know you a little bit before the show, what was really interesting is I loved what we discussed about core values. I think so many of us get off track and we lose our way when it comes to our careers because we've never even asked ourselves, what's important to us? What are our core values? How do you help your clients ascertain that?
You know, values, I feel, are the most important starting point when I'm working with clients, and I actually use values as an activity when I'm doing groups or workshops, whether it's a group of high school kids, whether it's a group of career changers, whether it's a group of people who've been recently laid off. I tell them to take a few minutes and really kind of center themselves on what exactly is it that they're looking for. And that's a challenging question. And so when they're stumbling along saying, I just want a job, I just need money.
I hear that. Just today, somebody said that. Like, he was like, how would you feel if I went into an interview and I said, oh, I'm up against a wall and I need a job? And that's not what an employer wants to hear. That's going to scare an employer and have
exactly.
them run for the door.
Right. And I talk about the fact that it's not just about the money or security or benefits. It's about digging a little deeper into what your core values are. And our values change over our lifetime. And what we want as a recent college grad is very different when we have a family or we're getting close to retirement, and our values shift and change. And so I like, you know, having lots of activities where clients kind of get to throw it out on their own and brainstorm, but also I use assessment instruments that actually have you sort through a list of values, like out of these top 20, what are your five that are the most important, or out of this deck of 50, choose your top 10.
Interesting. So I think you were telling me a little bit about that, and it's called Vista cards, right? And it's a type of card that you and a colleague designed?
Yes. So Kathy Severson and I worked together when the city of Los Angeles had a large contract, and we worked out of the one-stop career centers. And what we found...
Oh, yeah. I love those.
Yeah, that the one-stop career centers really had services for everybody at all levels, whether it was an aerospace engineer who'd been laid off, or whether it was a returning worker who had been let go for one cause or another, or was just a recent college grad. And we had lots of people coming through that really just didn't know what they wanted to do or where to start. And so what we identified was that if we could get them to figure out what their core values are and match that up with what their interests are and their passion is, and then complement it with what their transferable skills were and a little bit about their personality trait, we could kind of create a blueprint. And using that blueprint, we could recommend different areas to study or different occupations to pursue, and it would sort of give them a stepping stone. And I kind of coined it as helping them get on the road to job search success using that blueprint.
Yeah, I think that's so great because on my end, on the recruitment side, and we're going to actually have a recruiter on the show in November, because people sometimes will say to me, well, Jennifer, how do I work with a recruiter? When is it appropriate? And quite honestly, if you're looking to make a career transition, recruiters are going to be the worst resource for you. That's where somebody like yourself or Allison Garrido or somebody who's a career expert is going to come in and help you ascertain what are your transferable skills and how can you match that with your passion and your values.
Yeah, and that's really where I have a lot of fun, is when clients come to me at breakpoint and they say, you know, I've been doing the same thing my whole life and I'm burned out, or I'm at a crossroads and either one of two things is going to happen. Either I'm going to quit or get fired. And my response to them is, let's take two steps back and figure out who you are and what exactly is it that you're looking for next. And I kind of talk about it as three phases. Phase one being, look within yourself first and go ahead and take the time to really ask yourself, what exactly am I looking for? And once we can identify what you're looking for, then we can go to phase two, which is who's out there that needs somebody like you. So it's kind of a step one and step two.
Interesting. Okay, great. And so I know we were talking too about the career checkup. So when somebody comes to you and they say, Liz, I need your help, is that the first step in their checkup to make sure their career is healthy?
It is. It absolutely is. And I recommend that clients have a career checkup because it's kind of like going to the doctor and saying, okay, here's where it hurts, or here's where I've stressed myself out, and here's why I'm not comfortable anymore. I've gotten to a point where things aren't going well and I need to kind of check in. And so the career checkup, I tell clients to spend about 90 minutes to 2 hours with
Wow.
me. Yeah, that's a lot. Nice chunk of time. And I also want them to do a little homework before they come see me.
So, what sort of homework would you tell them to do?
You know, I really want them to take the time to say, Dear Liz, this is why I need to talk to a career counselor. I've been doing this, or I've always wanted to do this. I've always dreamed about this career, but I don't know where to start. Or I know I'm good at this, but I don't want to do that anymore. So I tell them to kind of journal it, you know, write it down, gather your thoughts, gather your intentions, and also forward me a link to your LinkedIn or send me a copy of a resume. Or if you've come across a dream job and you want to apply to it and you have that job description, send that over so I can get prepared for our little career checkup.
Oh, interesting. And it's such a fascinating thought. I love that when you and I started talking and all the different career coaches and counselors I've worked with throughout the years, I had never heard someone put it in such a interesting way, which it is true. It's like anything, you know, we check our health regularly, and yet what we spend 80% of our lives doing, which is going to work and, you know, investing time and energy, it has a direct correlation even to most people's health. Is if your career is healthy and if you get satisfaction and fulfillment, chances are you're probably going to be noticing a lot more happiness in other areas of your life.
Absolutely. And so I tell my clients that at the end of the career checkup, they're going to leave with what I call recommendations, referrals, and resources, so that they actually have a prescription and they're going to write part of this prescription, and I'm going to give them, you know, suggestions and things to do. But I'm also going to give them a little bit of feedback with respect to what's working, what's not working, and what needs attention. And for many of my clients, they leave with a whole new perspective of permission to explore something that they've been kind of hiding away with, or that pondering thought. And then I'm there for them when they circle back a couple weeks later and I check in with them. How's it going? Did you take those two aspirin and call me in the morning? Does it feel better? Is it like going to the chiropractor and getting the kinks out? Because then they can hit the ground running.
Now, here's an interesting question. Like going to the doctor, what percentage of us actually take the aspirin and rest up and do the things like my chiropractor, God bless him, always says, ice your back? What percentage of times do I actually ice my back after I see my chiro? Probably 1 out of 10. Do people actually do it because they're motivated enough to come and see you as a career counselor? Do you find a majority do follow up on whatever homework or assignments you've given them?
You know, that's a really great question. And so I do offer a coaching program. So some of the clients will call me up and they'll say, you know what, I need more. I need the assessments because I really don't know how to answer the question of what I want to do. Or they tell me that they need the accountability and they want me to kind of walk them through the process. And I love doing that. I love working with clients who say, I'm a clean slate. I really need to dig in to do the assessment. And it's not just doing the assessment. Some of them come to me and they say, oh, I did the Myers-Briggs, or I did the Strong Campbell, or I did those little values cards. But what do I do with it?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, okay, great. I know I'm an ENFP on Myers-Briggs or one of those tests. And then it's, how do I apply that in the real world?
Right. And they need a little role playing. They need an opportunity to kind of voice what they think they want to talk about and then have somebody like me kind of give them some concrete feedback with respect to different words they could use. Because I tell them there's very easy tools out there, and specifically the values activity. I tell clients the five most important questions that you need to ask when you're preparing to go on an interview, as well as the five most important things you want to tell somebody when they ask you the number one question they're going to get in an interview, which is tell me about yourself, are basically your top five values.
Now, well, let me pause you for a second, because I know a lot of our listeners are going to rewind or whatever you do on an MP3 to listen. So the first thing you said was the five
most important questions you should be asking the employer.
So what are those? Can you give us a couple of those?
That's a great question. And my audiences always are like, the pen is in their hand.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Let's see. I'm going to write these down myself.
What do I need to ask? And what I tell them is go back to that list of values that we went through. Because your values are going to be what's most important for you to ask. So if you value security and stability, you're going to want to find out, is this company the kind of company where I'm going to be feeling secure and stable? Is this industry one that's growing, or are people staying at this company for a long time? Because that's important to me. If somebody else values creativity, they're going to want to ask, will I have an opportunity to work creatively? So as somebody else might say, well, what if I value making money? And I say, I love that one, because anybody in the room that says I value making money has to understand that the companies that hire them are hiring them because they're either going to make them money or save them money. So those five questions are individual based on what your core values are.
I have to say, Liz, I've been doing this for, 14 years myself between recruiting and career coaching, and I've never had somebody say, well, it depends on what your values are. And I can actually see the error of my ways being a recruiter, because prior to anybody's interview, just today, I prepared three people for interviews. And what do I tell people to ask at the end of every interview? It's the same catch-all questions. Tell me about the company culture. What are the ideal qualities you're looking for in an individual? And not once has it ever occurred to me in all my years of recruiting that it might be beneficial. Well, what are your values? And to ask questions related to that. I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Right. When I was listening to one of your previous recordings, where you talked about a wish list.
Yeah. So a wish list does tie in a little bit, but I love what you said, because it really gets more to the earth of who they are as human beings, like
Absolutely.
What motivates them to get out of bed. And so I think it really taps into the more human side, as opposed to the more, you know, hey, I'm doing this because this is what you want, you know, why you left your job, how much money do you want. I think it's more connected than that. There's just something more beautiful about the way you're saying it.
Well, and it's much more personalized.
That's what I was looking for, yeah.
Because it's so much about, this is who I am. And if this is what you're looking for, then we have a good fit. And that's the easy answer to the question, well, what exactly are you looking for? If you ask an employer, you know, what are you looking for? Are you looking for the most educated person, or the person with the most experience, or the most skills? What they're going to say is, it's really all about the fit. So if I can get clients to figure out who they are and look internally and say to themselves, well, this is who I am. Now I know what kind of a person I am. Then phase two is, well, where do I fit in? Well, I'm going to fit in at the place that matches up with my core values.
I think that's so smart, because in the recruiting industry, there's something that we call a fall-off rate, which unfortunately not everybody works out in every job. And we do everything within our power at my company. I think there's a 20% attrition rate industry-wide in staffing, and we've gotten it down to about 11, knock on wood. But the thing is, sometimes somebody takes a job that they think is their ideal job, and you know, either we didn't know on the recruiting end, or they didn't ask the right questions. And I could really see that these tools you're offering would give people access to greater insights about themselves and greater insights about the job, so that they don't inadvertently take a misstep or take that wrong job. I could really see that cutting in half, or even more than that, the amount of wrong jobs somebody would take, because they're really taking jobs that are in line with their highest and best good.
Right. And that's where phase two, where I talk about, you know, coaching clients to go out there and start to talk to the companies or the industries that they want to work at, and to have those five values as questions, so that they're going in and they're asking people, you know, what do you think about this company? Is this company secure and stable, if that's what's important to you? Or, you know, what is the salary range for these positions? Because even figuring out what that is can give you so much more information as you answer the questions. And then I coach clients privately, and I tell them, expect multiple offers, because I want you to be out researching them just as much as they're going to be interviewing you. It's a 50-50 win-win situation. So you may have to circle back, and we may even start with an interview at a place that's the fifth on your list for practice and to see whether it hits on those core five values. And you may circle back thinking that your first choice was your first choice and find out that your third or fourth choice actually matches up better with your core values.
Yeah, there's a very easy question that I ask, and it's funny, this is my equivalent of core values that I do, is when somebody gets out of an interview, we ask them, scale of 1 to 10, it's the simplest thing ever. 10 being this is your dream job, 1 being dear God, don't ever send you back there again. How do you rate your interest? And people's gut reaction is normally the right one. And if they tell me, Jen, it's a solid 8, 9, or 10, and I'll say, what would have made a 10 if it wasn't? And they can give me good reasons, then I think it's worth moving forward on. But oftentimes, just the other day, I talked to somebody who said it was a 5 and she was still considering moving forward. And I'm like, what sort of world do we live in where somebody would rate on a scale of 1 to 10 a job of 5 and still see it as a potential viable move they would want to make? Because yes, I get it. Some of us don't rate jobs 8, 9, or 10. For some people, 7 or 8 might be the highest. But it's about satisfaction and enjoyment and fulfillment in the workplace, I think.
Absolutely. And what I created was what I call my decision-making matrix.
Oh, I want to hear. That sounds sexy.
It's a fun sort of spreadsheet where you actually do
you have, lost me at spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and I do it as sort of a paper pencil activity, but I remember working with an aerospace engineer and he was in transition and he knew that he had 5 core values, and I said, well, put them down on the left side of the page and then put all the different aerospace companies you could work for on the top and then match it up and ask yourself which of these 5 aerospace companies is going to match up this core value. And I give a couple bonus values. One of them I give is location, because that's going to be an effect. It's going to matter if you're in Los Angeles. Is this a 45-minute drive, an hour and a half drive? Is it China Lake? Is it
China Lake? I don't even know where that is.
That's far away.
Okay, so, far, far away land.
Exactly. So I remember my engineer came back to me, and he actually did an Excel spreadsheet because it's his own personal satisfaction. So he had fun as one of his core values, and he said he wanted to work at a fun company with fun people, and that's a gut reaction. And so he had to go interview for information to figure out who the boss would be and who he would have on his team. And so sometimes you go into a job expecting it to be one way and you meet the people and it's not what you expected. So you have to kind of dig in and fill out that chart and then circle back to the ones that are a good fit.
Yeah, and something to tie into that that's very interesting that I've known. Sometimes we get razzle-dazzled or we try to talk ourselves into jobs that we know aren't right for us. And I find that between the wish list, which I've talked about before, and your core values, when you combine those two, you're going to be much more likely to make a sound decision rather than a decision that you might be blindsided on your first day of work. Because like you said, you know what you're going in looking for. And I feel like sometimes we get so excited about a potential company just because we hear how great they are, whether it's Google or whatever sort of company might be out there, that we get blinded by what we actually wanted, which was our values or what was on our wish list.
Right. And when we're desperate, we do make desperate decisions. And that's where I tell clients, take a step back and don't be desperate.
Yeah, it all comes to the phrase I keep using again and again is reactive versus proactive. Anytime you can choose to proactively interview, proactively job hunt, instead of reactive, we spend most of our lives reacting to circumstances, people, things, our boss, jobs, etc. And that's how we live our lives. And the minute we react, we're giving our power away to a job, a company, a person, a situation. And if we can choose proactively, like you said, and understand that that's the question. It's a million-dollar question, I think you told me, is who are we as human beings? What defines us? What brings us satisfaction? I think it's a question philosophers have been asking for thousands of years, and now we get a chance to look at it in the workplace because there are so many jobs out there.
Right, and there's so many different choices to make. So I tell clients, use those core values to help you focus. And if you are focused on something, and location can be a prime example of holding you tight to what's close by. I joke with clients and I say, if you're looking online for the web, on the web, looking for jobs, that's the World Wide Web and everybody else is looking there as well. So take 2 steps back and really figure out what's your community, what's your style, what's your comfort. Are you a Beverly Hills type person or are you a downtown type person? Are you rural? Are you more local? What's a good fit for you? Where can you see yourself?
Yeah, and it does make a difference. For example, in my line of work in recruiting, what's really fascinating is a lot of people, of course, want to work in the San Fernando Valley because it's closer to home. Nobody wants to go to the hill over to the west side or to downtown. And what's fascinating from a recruiting standpoint, if we ever take somebody who's been working in the San Fernando Valley their whole career, and then they get desperate and they take a job in downtown or Century City, the likelihood of them leaving that job is probably 10 times more likely than somebody who's worked in downtown or Century City in the past. Does that make sense?
It really does. And I think that that grows true to the location concept that I try to touch base with on my clients. And so another example I give is when I was doing outplacement and I had a client in, I think she was in Reno, and she called up and she said, "Oh, you're going to be my outplacement counselor. I know exactly what I want to do. I want to be an actress." And I said, "Great. You have to move to New York or Los Angeles because you have to go where
the work is."
The work is. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And so one of the other things, I know that we talked about this in your career checkup, is the resume. What do you look at? I know you mentioned that you used to contract with the city of LA. When you're looking at a resume or you're helping somebody with revamping their resume, what are the things that are important to you that you're looking for?
Well, I've been doing career counseling for a really long time. I mean, I
just
graduated,
a few years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I graduated with a master's degree in it and came out and did workers' comp and did resume workshops for the cities. And so it's interesting now that it's now virtual. It's LinkedIn. And so resumes are almost obsolete because you should be uploading your experience and your places you've worked, and all that should be on LinkedIn. So I tell clients that resumes are phase three. So we're not even going to get to the resume until we've spent time figuring out who you are. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to write the resume until we identify who we want that resume to go to. So it's really kind of phase one, digging in with what your skills are, your interests are, and what you want to put on that resume. And I tell clients, you know, take things off the resume if you don't want to do them anymore.
Oh, so true. Because you see some people who will devote a half a page to an area, say it's customer service, and they loathe customer service. And so my experience mm-hmm. on the recruiting side is you want to de-emphasize the skills that you want to steer clear of and re-emphasize and make sure to bring to the top of the resume and to make a point of the things that you enjoy the most. And there's always a way to do that. I want to be very clear to our listeners. There's never a circumstance where you want to lie on your resume. It always
right.
blows up in your face.
Right.
But there is a way to pull out soft skills, transferable skills that you did in a job, and you can highlight that, you know, working with a career counselor like yourself, and figure out how to de-emphasize the less important tasks or the less interesting tasks and emphasize the things you really adore.
Yeah, and that's a big part of my job, is pulling it out of people, because they'll say, "Oh, I just did that at the office." And I'll say, "Well, what was it? What did you do? Dollars, percents, numbers, tell me more." And I really work hard to get clients to come up with signature stories. And once they come up with signature stories that they can use in networking, I take some of that information and I say, "Well, how do we write that down? How do we promote that on a resume, on a cover letter? You know, how do we go ahead and communicate all of the positive things that you want to talk about and really embellish them?"
Yeah, one little resume trick that I talk about in my book, Stop Hoping, Start Hunting, I think it's on page 64 of the book, is we talk about action verbs. And it's really important to start when you're writing your resume and you're using a bullet. A bullet is to draw attention there. And sometimes you'll see people use soft languaging. "I did blah, 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 blah." Whereas A, you don't want to use I. You do want to keep it in the third person, has been my experience. And B, if you start with an action verb, facilitated, managed, oversaw, organized, that's automatically a powerful statement. And then tie it into what you just said, work with an expert or a friend or somebody who can help you draw out what were the results, productivity, efficiency, and performance. Where have you increased what we call PEP, P-E-P, and that's productivity, efficiency, and performance. And if you can write the action verb followed by the result you produced, that time and time again, especially if it's in line with your values, is going to capture the attention of the employers.
Absolutely. And I always tell clients that the resume is almost a bit of an afterthought. It's a marketing piece, because the number one most effective way to get a job, as we all know, is networking.
So true.
It's I call it a three-step process. I say you have to start with yourself, and you have to ask yourself, what are the things that I know? What are the things that I like? And what are the things that I trust I can do really, really well? And some of it is boosting confidence in people to say, you know, look at all your experience. I walk people through their resumes, and I really dig into the resumes, and I want to know examples of, and then I watch their body language. And if they get excited about a bullet point, I make notes that we need to make that bullet point bigger. And then I have them draw with a pink highlighter what they don't want to have on the resume or what they don't want to do. So I know how to do it, but I want to know if they like to do it and if they want to do it again. Because on the flip side, when they get out and they start marketing and they start looking at companies, I tell them nobody's going to hire you unless they get to know you, and nobody's going to hire you unless they get to like you, but they're also not going to hire you unless they trust you. So what you choose to focus on has to be the right fit for where you want to go to find something that's a good fit for you.
Yeah, and sometimes, for example, there are people who get to the end of an interview and they're not chosen and they're the runner-up. And for some people, it could come across as harmful, devastating, oh, it's so sad, when people don't actually realize it's a gift. If for whatever reason you weren't chosen for that particular job, there might have been something there in the company that they just didn't see it was a cultural match, or there could have been that one little thing that was missing. And most of the time I've seen where the runner-up doesn't get the job, that person winds up in their dream job in a different scenario.
Absolutely. And I tell clients that when they come to me and they're about to be laid off, I go, this might be the best thing that ever happened to you. Just because you didn't expect it, you have to look at the bright side and what could happen. And then the clients that I get that tell me about their dream job that they didn't get, what I ask them is, did they follow up? And did they ask why? Why did they not get that job? And what is it that they need? Is it a skill gap? Is it something they can learn? Is it some knowledge that they need to gain? And who else is doing whatever that company's doing? Who's their competition? Where else could you go? Because if they're looking for good, strong people, and just because you didn't get hired doesn't mean that that's the only game in town.
And you brought up a really fascinating point about that, about follow-up. Sometimes, depending on the size of the company, I have seen it where somebody might apply for a job and that department wasn't the right fit for that person, and yet they might have really loved you. And if you were the runner-up, you want to stay in touch with that company in case a department that might be a better cultural fit could come up. And sometimes people get so dismayed that they just give up on that entire company.
Right, right. There was a statistic out that most people will quit or get fired within the first 3 months.
Yes, that's why recruiters have a 90-day guarantee.
Is that what that is?
It really is. Actually, most recruiters do have a 90-day guarantee because the average person will know within 90 days, both either the employer or the employee, if it's the right fit.
And if it's the right fit. And that's why I tell my clients that had a dream job, I go, did you follow up 3 months later? And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. So that's always, because it's a bruise. It's a bruise to your ego. It's a bruise to the confidence you had and you went in. And sometimes companies will put you through 2, 3, 4, 5 interviews and then go with another candidate. And that can be hard. But I always tell my clients, circle back in a year. Maybe the timing just wasn't right.
And sometimes, too, I think it deals with resiliency. I actually tell people all the time, whether it's job seekers or just anybody I meet out there who's faced with some sort of adversity, I truly believe that we're choosing these obstacles. And so just the other day, there was a job seeker who said, Jen, it's just been really hard and everybody just keeps passing on me and I think I'm just not good at this. And yes, you could absolutely go down that path and say, I suck, nobody likes me. It's like that song, nobody likes me, everybody hates me.
It's the pity party, pity party.
Exactly. Or you could do the flip side and say, wow, you know, what could I learn from this? How is this an opportunity for me to learn and grow? And that way you can actually increase your confidence and increase whatever that skill was that was lacking in that one interview and use it as a gift rather than something, some atrocity that happened to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And keeping people motivated and optimistic is a huge part of my job.
I spend
a lot of time, and I try to get them to focus on some success stories. I try to use acronyms like being on top, where I have them figure out what their passion is, what are they excited about, if it's a hobby or an interest. And then I want to make sure they're spending time doing that. Because when they're laid off or unemployed or between jobs, they have a gift of time. So use that time wisely to give back to the community, to help somebody else. And I always try to make them erase the I'm looking for a job and replace it with, do you know anybody who could use my help? And back to what they want to do and who they want to help. And sort of shift that paradigm so that when they're thinking about being on top, they're talking with people about their talents, talking about what they're passionate about. And then the letter O in my little acronym of TOP is then those opportunities will come up. But
yeah,
it's only when they start guiding people down a path of, this is what I like to do, and this is what I'm really good at, and do you know anybody who needs help with it?
Yeah, I think it's great. It's so funny you say that. Just before I came over here, there was a gentleman we were preparing for an interview, and he had to take time off to take care of a family member. And during that time, because he had extra time, he went to culinary school. And here you have this technology guy, and I said, oh, well, do you want to do that full-time? He said, no, that's been a passion of mine. It's been a bucket list thing that I never in a million years thought I would have the time or the resources to go to culinary school. And now he's like, I have a chance to do the thing I love and I'm passionate about, you know, in the evenings and on the weekends, and to complete this course.
Yeah. And the continuing to learn, I think that the millennials and the Generation Y, they really get that because they're changing jobs more frequently and they're filling in the gaps. They're filling in e-learning and, you know, whether it's a TED Talk that gives them a burst of information or whether they're on some other website like lynda.com to brush up on their skills, that time between jobs, they're actually sharpening the saw, as Stephen Covey would say. And so a lot of times when I'm working with young people, they want to be entrepreneurs and they want projects. And I say, that's great, but when you're not in a project, what are you going to do to get ready and prepared for the next project? What skills do you need to get? What do you need to work on? And I think some of the older clients that I work with who say, well, I'm too busy job hunting. And I go, well, you're never too busy to learn. So find a way to sharpen that saw.
Yeah, you have to find a balance. And I notice a lot of resistance from more seasoned workers sometimes to go back to LinkedIn. I do want to bring up one thing that I noticed we talked about. You said to put your resume on LinkedIn. And so your LinkedIn can be your resume, but I just want to make sure our listeners understand you don't want to actually post your resume on LinkedIn unless you're not working. If you're not working, by all means, please be sure to put your resume on LinkedIn. Just make sure it doesn't have your home address on it for safety purposes. But I see sometimes this is where people get in a lot of trouble with LinkedIn and Indeed. I'm a huge advocate of both of them. I think they're brilliant. If you are not working, absolutely have your information readily accessible, a resume linked on it on LinkedIn or on Indeed. But sometimes job seekers don't realize that their resume is on LinkedIn or Indeed and they're still employed and their employer is going to start scratching in their head. The good news with LinkedIn is that LinkedIn is a professional networking site. It's like an online Rolodex. So if all you have on there is your profile, which could look like your resume, but it's not, that's acceptable. But the minute you actually put that PDF up of your resume, that's going to be a red flag for your employer.
And that's a really good point, because I think that looking for a job is not black and white.
Yes.
And
lot of gray.
There are no two jobs alike, and there are no two job seekers alike. And I agree with you. You don't want to put a resume up as a PDF, because you want each and every job you apply to have a customized, different resume.
I didn't even think of that, too, because I do see, and again, I'm not adverse to it. Depends on the circumstances. I get some people are really aggressively looking, but that's a brilliant point that you raise, is you could have a resume that's geared towards one thing and then have an employer who needs something else, and then they overlook you because your resume is not in line with that on LinkedIn.
Exactly. And that's why that million-dollar question that I coach clients to ask themselves, which is what exactly are you looking for, is also the million-dollar question I want them to ask the companies. So before you send a resume, even if you've got a job description, and let's just use ABC, it's an accounting, bookkeeping, clerical position, and you say to yourself, well, I'm going to send my accounting, bookkeeping, clerical resume. But if you haven't asked anybody at that company or somebody who works at that company or a hiring manager or a recruiter, what exactly are they looking for? You're missing out on a great opportunity. Because you could go into the interview or you could write a cover letter that talks about accounting, bookkeeping, and clerical work and how diligent and efficient and friendly you are. And then somebody, you get to the interview, you go through the whole interview, and at the very end, you remember when they say to you, so do you have any questions for us? And you go, oh yeah, Liz Moeller, the career coach, she said to ask, what exactly are you looking for? And that's when they might say to you, well, we need someone who's really just excellent at saying yes because it's a zoo in here. And you've presented them A, B, C, D, E, F, diligent, efficient, and friendly, and not X, Y, Z, and therefore you're not a good fit.
Hmm.
And you're probably not going to get the job, or you may not want that job. So figuring out what the employer wants and then customizing the resumes is always going to be a better fit, because then it's what they're looking for.
And what you just brought up is something really helpful, a twofold that I will tell our listeners out there. LinkedIn can be very helpful for a couple of things. One, if for those of you who might not be familiar with LinkedIn, I know we did a show, I think it was back on August 24th with a LinkedIn expert. But for those of you who aren't familiar with it, you can use LinkedIn to see who you're connected with at a company. So say it's a 10,000 person company, it will show you on LinkedIn who your first connections and what that means is somebody you directly know who works at that company. And like Liz just said, that is a brilliant way to go ahead and go out there and then reach out to that person and say, hey, can you tell me a little bit about the culture or that sort of information or about hiring processes there before you ever set foot in the door or submit your resume to them? Two, something else that's really important that I tell people to do with LinkedIn is that in today's society, we are in a very unique position that we've never had before in history. You can go out there and look up your competition. You can look up the person who has your dream job at that company and ask yourself, what do I need to do? Where did they work? How do I put myself on that same trajectory? And three, to recent grads, I get so many recent grads who say, well, gosh, I don't know what direction I want to go in. I don't know what I want to do. Well, I will tell you, I had a recent grad reach out to me earlier this year and she said, Jennifer, you know, I was impressed with your profile. I would love to talk to you about recruiting. I took about 30-45 minutes chatted with her about what it looked like to be a recruiter. And if you're polite to people, oftentimes you will get a response from folks. And that's a great way, whether you're in the second phase of your career, the third phase and thinking of a career transition or just starting your career out, it doesn't hurt to reach out to experts in the field and say, hey, I really admire you. Do you have 5 or 10 minutes for me to pick your brain on your industry, your company, or anything of that nature? And I find that to be extremely beneficial as far as a way to use LinkedIn.
Oh, it's absolutely the best way to use LinkedIn. You nailed it, because it's about the network. And a lot of clients don't understand this, but people want to help. I mean, people love to give advice. And I coach a lot of clients on, how does it make you feel when somebody calls you up and says, oh, you're an expert in this, I'd love to get your advice? You're making that person feel really good. And how do they think about you when you ask them for advice? They're going to turn it around and go, that's pretty smart of that person to reach out and contact me. I work a lot with colleges and universities that are trying to build their alumni database and give back to their alumni. And it's because they want those alumni to have the good positive will with respect to their colleges and universities. And so alumni networking events, alumni activities that can reconnect the alumni back to the school or university, even coming back to your college campus to go to a job fair. I just helped Loyola Marymount University with a job fair, and it was great. They had little ribbons that said alumni, and here they were working a booth and recruiting other students, and you could just see the smile on the faces because they knew what these students were going through. And so a lot of times I'll go and I'll support some of my alumni organizations, whether it's going to a tailgate party with the Wisconsin Badgers or whether it's doing something at UCLA where I have a son who's in school there. It's fun to give back, and I think a lot of my clients don't understand that. They don't want to impose. They don't want to bother somebody. And yet when I get them starting down that networking path and going on LinkedIn and researching people and seeing the commonalities, everybody wants to help somebody else.
It's so true. It's such a gift. Like for somebody like myself, everybody says, oh, you're so busy, you're so busy. If somebody genuinely comes from a place of kindness, that's the thing too, is it all has to do with tone. There was somebody I was on the phone with this morning who was being abrupt with me and a little bit rude. And so if you're going to be that way with somebody like me, who I love helping people, it's going to naturally make me less inclined to want to help you. But if you come, and whether it's an email or a phone call with a tone of, hey, is there anything you could share, any insights or any recommendations? I will always take the time for a phone call, no matter how busy my day is. But it's about that reciprocal respect and mutual appreciation. And so I think for any of our listeners out there who are toying with the idea of making a move or how do I approach this, just keep in mind, tone is everything. You know, can you help me versus can you help me is a completely different thing. And that's the problem sometimes too with emails. I find that as long as you start the email via LinkedIn, whether you're emailing or connecting with somebody with some sort of pleasantry and you make it personalized, that's really going to make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's doing your homework as well and researching and knowing a little bit about the company. Not that you're willing to do anything or work anywhere and you don't want to get something from somebody, but offering to help. And I call it a paradigm shift. And I do a lot of paradigm shifts with my clients. And I talk about how if they've been doing the job search one direction, let's just shift it a little bit. What's working? What's not working? What needs attention? And is there a better way to do it? And is it the tone of voice? Are you sounding desperate? Are you sounding demanding? Because nobody's going to answer the phone if you leave a message saying, hey, you know, I need a job. But if you volunteer to offer to help them on a project because you have time, because you're between jobs, people are more likely to want to help you.
And for our listeners out there too, if you are doing this over the phone as opposed to via an email, smile. I know whenever we teach people for phone screens for an interview, there are the three S's: stand up, smile, and stretch. Because even right now, Liz and I are just naturally smiling because we're having a lot of fun. But if I were sitting, I don't even think I can do this not smiling. But if I try, I can't.
Well, even your tone of voice changes. You go from smiling to, oh my gosh, I've got to talk. And your jaw drops.
I can't even do it. Yeah. I don't even think I can intentionally not smile. But it does make a difference. Because if you leave a message for somebody, whether you're doing it via a voicemail or a message, or even if you're doing a phone interview, remember, just stand up, smile, and stretch. If you just create that extra little bit of rapport, that smile can be all the difference in the callback that you get.
Absolutely. Because nobody wants to hire an upset, angry, sad person.
Or a rude person. Definitely not a rude person.
Definitely not. They want to hire the people that are fun. They want to hire the people that seem energetic and seem active. And I tell my clients that are job hunting, and when they're going to a networking event, they need to be having fun at that networking event. They need to stand up, smile, and go forward and lead with their actions. And then follow up and, you know, be genuine. So if networking with a group of people is a bore to you, you might want to consider that that might not be the audience you want to work for. So ask yourself, where are the people that I like to work with? What am I passionate about? Because there's always going to be somebody looking for help. And when you go to a job fair and there's 105 companies at the job fair, you're going to approach the table where the people are smiling. And you're going to say, this looks like fun for me, and you want to engage them. It's the same way. They're looking for the person that walks in the door that's going to give a positive first impression.
You know, you just hit the nail right on the head. It's so true. It's like if you see somebody else is smiling, it makes you want to smile. And the thing is, though, people feed off of your energy. You know how they say, somebody and I were just talking about this recently, about animals, how they feed off your energy. The same is true with whoever you're interacting with. If you put a smile on your face and you naturally exude a friendliness and affability and ability to be relatable, it makes all the difference in the world. And what you just said was, again, something I haven't heard before. If you're at a networking event and you're bored, you might want to consider changing industries. Because for me, whenever I go to a networking event in my industry, in the legal world or in a similar world, I just love it. I love everybody I work with. I'm so happy to be there. And I think it's contagious because then people want to be around you. And I've never heard somebody say that before. I love what you just said, that if it's something that's quote unquote boring to you, that might not be the group you want to be around.
Absolutely. And I've had people say, well, why would I want to network with people doing the same thing I'm doing? And what I say is, if they're doing the same thing you're doing, then focus on the people that are the very, very best at what they do. If it's the very, very most sought after, highest billing company with the greatest revenue, or it's a restaurant that has the longest line out the door, or it's something in demand, if it's that good of a company, what's the one thing that company might need? It's help. Yeah. And so you're there with them to say, maybe I can help. And we all want to, you know, catch that train that's going up the hill because it's going places. We want to go to the places where we're going to meet people doing what we want to do and offer to help them, to say, you know, I'm learning from you. I like what you're doing. Maybe I can support you. Maybe I can help you. Let's work together.
And I love everything we've talked about, Liz, today. What I love is it all comes back to help and contribution. I think everything in life is about how can I contribute, share, and help others. And I built my entire business. I've never actually done marketing. In fact, even having the show, I might have only mentioned my company on it a couple of times because that's not why I do this. And when I first built my business, it was about strategic alliances. And so I aligned myself with other recruiters in the industry, which seemed counterintuitive. Why am I hanging out with my quote-unquote competition? Because they're amazing. And I refer the best business that I can't help to the best other people in the industry, which makes me a better resource for my clients. And then I have these great strategic alliances where if I can't help a client or they can't help a client, we can refer back and forth to one another. And it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, it's true. I work with a lot of coaches because a lot of coaches and a lot of recruiters, they don't know the career portion of it.
I love what you shared. There's been so much today out of all the career coaches I've worked with and had the pleasure of interviewing on this show. I love the flavor that you brought today.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I like doing it at the high school level because I like working with young people as they're figuring
it out. So fun.
And then I also like working with the really smart people, the Silicon Beach crowd that are very entrepreneurial and they're going in five different directions. And it's fun to corral them. And just anybody that comes at the approach of, I love what I'm doing, but I want something more. And they're a great candidate to me because I don't want them to burn out where they are. I want them to keep stretching and keep growing. And there's definitely other places and directions that people can go. And sometimes I'm the one that just creatively thinks outside the box and says, why not explore doing that? I had a client call me in Michigan, and he said, you know, I want a job in California, and I'm a doctor in Michigan. And I said, well, tell me a little bit more about it. And he said, well, my undergrad was computer science, and then I went to med school. and I really want a job in California. And I said, great, you know, you should come out to visit. And he said, oh, I have to go to Madison, Wisconsin. I'm being trained by Epic, which is a big financial, it's not financial, it's sort of the computer software behind all the healthcare. And I said, well, start networking when you get there, because anybody going to an Epic conference is in Madison. Start telling them you want to go to California. Stop telling them that you're in Michigan. And sure enough, he texted me that he had sat next to somebody, and it was LOL, and I thought, laugh out loud. And he called me later and said, no, it was a little old lady, and her brother works at a hospital, and he's going to set me up for an interview. So,
oh my God,
long story short,
brilliant story.
He started his networking right after one phone call with me, and then landed an interview less than a month later in California. And he's currently here working and loves it.
Oh, that's such a brilliant story. Liz, it has been absolutely delightful to have you on the show today. I mean, you've given so many gems of wisdom for anybody out there. If, say, you're not local or you're not in a position to be able to use Liz, her cards online. Now, it's the cards for the Vista. Is it www.vista-cards.com?
Yes. So Kathy Severson and I worked together for many years, and Kathy Severson created this deck of cards, and it matches up with John Holland's Rysik theory of career development. So anybody who's ever done an inventory that matches up with the Holland's codes, these card sorts are a little more tangible, a little more fun, and you can absolutely download the instructions on how to use them and order the cards from Kathy Severson.
Awesome.
Or from me. You can order them from me directly.
Awesome. And your website, again, is...
It's my name. It's www.lizmohler.com.
Awesome. And Mohler is spelled M-O-H-L-E-R, correct?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Awesome, Liz. It has been such a delight to have you on the show, and I'm so excited. You know, we look forward to hopefully having you back at some point next year.
Good.
And then next week, tune in. We're going to have Rosalind Kahn on the show. She's going to be talking about impactful speaking, and she's also actually a TEDx speaker. She's done numerous different TEDx talks and will help us increase our efficacy in communication. And of course, the last Monday of every month, we've been doing mock interview Mondays. So tune in for the last Monday on Halloween if you or somebody you know of is looking for a job and wants to hear a little live mock interview coaching. And you can always find us again on iTunes. If you miss the show live on LA Talk Radio, you can always download it from our archives or find it at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. Oh, and one more thing. I did want to mention for any of our listeners out there who might be interested in an event that Liz is doing. I think you had said, is it on, I'm looking at this right now, it's on November...
Is it the November 10th?
Yeah. So there were two things, I think, that you wanted to let our listeners know about. One was, aren't you doing a thing in Playa coming up, too?
Yeah. The Playa Vista Library has me doing a holiday help for teens. And I think it's for students and teenagers. And
oh,
so
great.
Anybody interested in getting a quick overview of the world of work and a little shot in the arm on how to get a holiday job, it's specifically targeted towards teenagers and college students. And it's at the Playa Vista Library on November 10th.
At 6 p.m., right?
At 6 p.m. And then I'm going to be speaking at UCLA for Bruin Family Week.
Nice.
On how to get your college student a job. So if anybody is around Los Angeles for Bruin Family Week, it's this weekend. I'll be speaking on Friday, 3:30, and at 5 o'clock, and at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Although that's kickoff, 1 o'clock. So if you're not going to the Bruin game, or if you don't see me at UCLA this weekend, absolutely give me a call, because I do a lot of pro bono workshops. I also do a lot of workshops through LA County, LA City, and you can just call me up and say, hey, Liz, where are you speaking? Or email me and ask me, and I'll let you know.
Because it all comes back to giving back. So thank you for that, Liz. And thank you to all of our listeners out there. Have a fabulous week, everybody, and thank you, as always, for tuning in.
Thanks.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.